the Five Star Zone with Rico Beard.
Hey, welcome to a pre-tournament edition of the Five Star Zone. Rico Beard, Harold Sheldon joining me from the BTN Network, Senior Research Manager. Harold, so the season is over. I don't think anybody saw Michigan State winning this thing by not one, not two, but three games. But they did. They handled their business on senior day. They avoided the trap that was the Iowa game. And they came out there. They defeated the University of Michigan by double digits again, 79-62. In a game, let's face it, Michigan had a lead at 3-2, and that was it. After that, the game was over. Jaden Akins started raining in threes, and before you know it, man, it was. I thought for a second they were going to hit 100 points. They had 50 at halftime. They kind of left, you know, took their foot off the gas. Michigan made a valiant comeback. Wolf decided he wanted to show up and play. They got it close. Game was over. And then I think the bigger story of the game is what happened with 37 seconds left when all of a sudden the MSU tradition that they've done going back to the days of Sean Rusford, you know, while they're at the free throw line, they let each senior have their moment. They go out to the middle of the logo. They kiss it. They wave to the crowd. And then they go over and hug the coach and celebrate with their teammates. A lot of times they get misty-eyed. You can see it even when I was watching the rebroadcast of it, you could see Jaden Akins was getting a little teary-eyed because he knew the finality of it. I'm never going to play on this court again. And then I don't really know how else to put it. You had a couple knuckleheads from Michigan, freshmen, who just decided, nah, we good. We ain't going to allow this to happen. Trey Holloman, I said this. Trey Holloman has put himself into the status of Jalen Watts Jackson, whereas he will never pay for another drink again, another meal again, so long as any Spartan is in the room, the restaurant, the building, and they figure out, oh, that's Trey Holloman, they're going to send a drink over to him because he has gone into Spartan history for basically taking on two Michigan players in Kaysan and Brooks and was just like, nah, we don't do that here. Push both of them. Now, like, look, if the Michigan players really wanted to do something, he pushed them first. They could have did something. To me, they kind of looked like some wannabe gangsters and got they, you know, he called their bluff and they really didn't want the smoke.
Yeah, that's certainly what it seemed like. And it's just kind of interesting seeing the evolution of Trey Holloman as a leader. You know, the fact that he was able to take the demotion to the bench for Jace for the good of the team. The fact that he's the one that's the spark in the Iowa game, you know, going up to the point guard there, kind of getting everybody going. And then this, you know, it seems like he really embraces what Michigan State basketball is when they're at their best. Like, they got to have a dog at point guard, or at least at one of the guards has to be a dog. We saw, you know, even going all the way back to, like, the Travis Waltons, like, he was a dog. Also wore number five, maybe some with the number five. But he's a guy that has just fully embraced the tradition. You can see why Izzo named him a captain, even though he wasn't a senior. And I think the team is kind of taking on a personality of him and Fears. You know, I think even though Akins is the senior, those two guys are the bulldogs of the team. And frankly, that's what they've been missing in the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point when you look at it, because I think Izzo always wanted, because speaking of fives, he always wanted that toughness out of Cassius, that junkyard dog out of Cassius, but that wasn't Cassius. That just wasn't. That was never Cassius. I think he got it with Trey. I don't think he knew he had it at first, but then he started to see what we all saw. The Trey, I always laugh like, man, I guess he grew up in the mean streets of Minneapolis. I didn't know there was mean streets, but apparently he grew up in the mean streets. He's got that streak going. And honestly, let's just talk about the incident first and then we get to the game. I would have appreciated the fact it's a rivalry game if Dusty May – whoops. Okay, here we go. If Dusty May would have just come out and said, hey, you know what? Yeah, we did it. We didn't like what they was doing. And you know what? Screw them. Don't try to embarrass us. Don't try to do this. I get it. I understand. It's a rivalry game. What I didn't like, man, was the all shucks passive aggressive. Oh, do they really do this? And then the next day he comes back and he doubles down on it. It's like, Dusty, come on. You from Indiana. I don't have to go to certain places to know what they do. I know that at the end of the first quarter in Iowa, they wave to the children at the hospital. I know that at Michigan, they touch the banner when they run. Like, there's certain things you just know that they do. And for him to act like he's this total, complete buffoon, it was a bad look, in my opinion, because now you almost look like a little bit of a Karen where you did something, and then when you got called out on it, you wanted to try to back it down and be passive aggressive. It's like, I would respect it more. Maybe it's just me. I would respect it more if he just came out and was like, you know what, F them. They ain't doing it on my watch.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would have appreciated that more if they would have just said, hey, look, we thought they were taking too long. We didn't like it. And so we wanted to do something about it, as opposed to, you know, doing the whole, well, I didn't grow up with a foam finger. You know, I don't watch any documentaries, all that kind of stuff. Just, you know, it's the rival. You didn't like what happened. Just say that. I'm fine with it. We've seen Big Ten coaches throughout the years at multiple schools not have any issue with this outside of Chris Holtmann one time. And then when they explained what that was, he was fine with it after that. I just don't get why this was such a big deal for Michigan. Every other coach seems to be fine with it. You know, Greg Gard, you know, years ago allowed Aaron Harris to kiss the ass, and he didn't even have a uniform on. He was on his street clothes with crutches and allowed him to go do it. And that didn't, you know, that would have taken more time than what it took for what happened on Sunday. We saw Brad Underwood shake Tum Tum Nairn's hand after he kissed the S, and this is still 4 minutes left in the game. He understood what it was, and he appreciated, you know, the program culture. You saw Chris Collins during the Maryland game. They're losing by double digits, and that's not a rivalry by any stretch, but you saw – he called a timeout so Maryland could get their seniors some more time to sub into the game because he understands how important senior day is in college basketball, and he understands traditions of the Big Ten. So the fact that Michigan decided not to do that, in my opinion, is a bad look when you see no other coach has had an issue with this.
Well, I'm laughing because if anybody was going to have the issue, I think it probably would have been Juwan Howard at Michigan in 2020 when I believe they played him in the final game. I think that was the game where Cassius gets the assist record. And yeah, I'm trying to think, was it 2019 or 2020?
I think Cassius' last game was Ohio State.
Okay, so then it was the 2019 season. Yeah, because he threw the assist, he threw it to Tillman. Tillman gets it. And place erupts. It was an alley-oop. And, I mean, yeah, they did all of that. I remember they stopped the game for it. They did a whole lot of stuff. Look, what I'm saying is it happens. And I would rather you just said, I don't appreciate it. You know what? Because when he comes back and says, hey, they were rubbing our nose in it, it was like, Dusty, it's not about you. It really isn't about you. And here's the thing. If you don't like it, win the game. Because when Ohio State in 2012 beat State, Draymond had to do it after the game because they lost the game. I remember, I forgot which Buckeye it was, but he had a shot with 0.8 seconds to go, a fadeaway, and that was just it. I mean, to go this route and the foam finger and documentaries is like, if he was looking to amp up the rivalry and hoops, I think he did. Now you just, because I've always said, man, show that fight in the game and maybe you're not losing by 17, because this comes from the school. And I guess what I find ironic is Michigan is a school that's built on traditions. That's just everything about them is about tradition, down to their helmets, down to everything. Matter of fact, they won't even use the sweetest logo they got, the little Wolverine with the little sailor cap on. I'd use that thing everywhere, but they won't do it. This is the same school also that plants a flag at Ohio Stadium when they beat the Buckeyes because, you know, they won and they had no problems with it. But when it's about them, They act like the spoiled little rich kid. It's cool to do stuff, but the second somebody retaliates, you got to go run and tell your daddy, who's a rich lawyer, and now you trying to sue and do stuff instead of just, hey, if you're going to do it, do it. I've always been, Harold, if you can dish it, you got to take it if you can dish it out.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. And I mean, we even saw it was last year when they were playing Northwestern and it came down to a last second shot. They couldn't do the ceremony then because the game was still in doubt. So in addition to the Ohio State example you mentioned with Will Buford hitting the shot, when the game is close, they can't afford to do the ceremony. Yeah. So if Michigan would have kept that close, you wouldn't have seen it. Or if they would have won the game, it would have been after the game. So, yeah, I don't see why this was such an issue. There were clips out when Dusty May was talking about how, oh, we can't have guys standing at half court. There was clips where we saw Michigan players standing at three-point line instead of standing at half court on other free throws. It was the same situation when they played Illinois, where they had two guys standing at the three-point line, not at half court. So it's kind of like, dude.
No, it's funny that you said that, because think about this. If you're down by 17 and, okay, you still think you got a chance, isn't the offensive rebound more valuable than – because then he was like, well, you know, we didn't want a Cohen Carr release for a dunk except for Dusty. Cohen Carr, not even in the game. If Izzo really wanted to run up the score, he would have called a timeout. He would have put Cohen Carr back in the game, because being there in that crowd wanted a Cohen Carr dunk. That was the only thing that they didn't get. That would have been the victory cigar. That would have been rubbing your face in it, because I remember Wisconsin did that. Bo Ryan did an alley-oop play against Michigan State, and Izzo got pissed about it. That's rubbing it in your face. But Cohen Carr's not on the bench. And instead of getting an offensive rebound to, I guess, maybe get a put back and go down by 14 instead of 17, you can see that you got two guys back there. I mean, Dusty, just basketball IQ. Let's just act like we don't really know what's happening. What was your end game here? You were stopping a Michigan State fast break with 37 seconds to go. You were down 17. If anything, they fouled you to put you on the line, and they were just going to run out the clock like they did. There was really no point to do it. You saw the two guys. They were back there being defiant about it. Fat Brooks grew up in the state of Michigan. He got recruited by Michigan State. He knew the deal. He knew the time. He knew what he was doing. You know what? I guess that's what's going to make it a rivalry. Probably doubt that the Big Ten has them play next year for the final game, probably the next couple of years for the final game, because I'm sure Ward Manuel will go and complain about it because they're always aggrieved. I'm quite sure Eli Savitt, the Washtenaw County prosecutor, probably out trying to file paperwork right now to try to get Trey Holloman arrested, because that's just kind of little bitches that they are. But I digress. Let's get back to the game. Michigan State 79-62. They cap off a season I don't think anybody saw it coming. I mean, geez, it's like, aside from a bad weekend in L.A., this team could have really done something. It's like they lose to Memphis, and then they don't lose, so they go to L.A. But then they hit Indiana, which is a possible matchup for them in the first round. And then they just pick it back up. I think they're second to Auburn when it comes to quad one victories. I mean, a couple questions. One, can they keep this thing rolling and actually win the Big Ten tournament with their depth? Because I think that I think we all know what Indiana's going to do. It worked for them. They're going to slow the game to a crawl. But if Indiana wins that first game and they got Oregon, which is actually, ironically enough, two teams that gave Michigan State fits. Oregon was up by, 14 at the half at the Breslin Center. Is that the most – can they get out of that first game Friday at noon against either one of those teams?
Yeah, it feels like a tournament where if they win that first game, they should win the whole thing. Like a lot of times we've seen Michigan State kind of start slowly in that first game before picking it back up. And then once they win that game, they're usually fine. So that side of the draw didn't do them any favors. Like you said, the Indiana-Oregon matchup, you got a team that they already lost to and a team that was up double digits in their building. And then if you win that game, you potentially get UCLA, another team that you lost to. So it's certainly not the easiest draw they could have gotten. And even if it is UCLA, or if UCLA loses, it's still Wisconsin, which was, you know, a 2-point game at the 4-minute mark. So it's going to be a tough road, but this tournament seems built for a team like Michigan State, where you're relying on guys that are only playing 25 minutes. You're not doing the Maryland thing where guys are playing 30, 35 minutes a night, and you got to do that for three straight nights. You know, normally I'm not a huge, you know, Big Ten tournament, like, oh, we got to win it, you know, because you want to rest and, you know, get the extra time off. But the way that these guys play, you know, if no one's getting more than 30 minutes, like, you know, just lay it all out and see what happens. You know, I do think if they play Indiana again, especially with it being home crowd, you know, that could be a challenge. But I feel like they'll be better equipped for the zone than they were the first time. I think that game they were just completely caught off guard because Indiana hadn't played it all year. And then once they saw it, they didn't really know what to expect from it. But now that you know you might see that again, I think they'd be better prepared.
So looking at this thing, and you talked about Maryland. Man, where did Maryland come from? I mean, Maryland was looked like left for dead. And I looked up, and they're the 2 seed. Not Purdue, not Michigan. Maryland is the 2 seed in this tournament. What's been the turning point for Maryland?
So it seemed like for Maryland, especially early on, they didn't know how to close games away from home. You know, they went out west, the Pacific Northwest, lost to Washington and Oregon. And for whatever reason, it just seemed like they couldn't find ways to close games. And then they went to Indiana and they found a way to win that game, and they haven't looked back. They've completely relied on that starting five. They've been really good. They've got the freshman of the year and Derrick Queen. They got 2 really good guards who can make tough shots. You know, we saw Rodney Rice make a ton of them against Michigan State. Jacoby Gillespie made his share against Michigan. So between those 5, you know, they're just really, really hard to beat, and they defend really well. Like, they want to get up and down, but as you saw against Michigan State, they could play a game in the 50s and 60s as well. So, you know, I think that they're well coached. They're very tough. They're very physical. And when you got guards that can make plays, you know, that makes you a tough out in March.
All right, Harold, before we get to some awards, I guess who would be the dark horse, the team that could, not necessarily anybody who got the double bye, who could actually win this whole thing?
I'm really looking at the 6 and the 7. I think Purdue and Illinois are very well positioned to make a run in this thing. Purdue is the 6. If they would play the winner of Rutgers, USC, we just saw Purdue drop 100 on Rutgers a week or two ago.
Right.
I feel like that's a matchup where USC or Rutgers wouldn't be able to defend Purdue, and Purdue should be able to get whatever they want on offense. After that, Purdue would play Michigan. You know, they ran them out of Mackey the first time. They had a big lead the second time in Ann Arbor. We've seen how much Michigan has struggled over the last couple of weeks. So there's a chance there for Purdue to get to the semis, potentially play Maryland, who they already beat. And then you got Illinois, who seemed to have figured something out. You know, after they lost to Duke, seems like they kind of recalibrated. You know, after getting embarrassed, they come back. They beat Iowa. You know, they beat Purdue. They blow Michigan out. Maurice Johnson supposed to be back for the conference tournament. He had missed some time, the big freshman underneath. So that's going to give them some added depth. No, their draw isn't bad either.
That's the one that hurt his wrist in the state game?
Yep. Yeah, yep. He just got cleared. So he should be ready to go. They won it last year. No, so Brad Underwood's got success in his tourney. He's won 2 of them already since he's been there. So I look at Purdue and Illinois as teams that can make a run.
So, Harold, looking at, you know, Michigan and the way they finished out the season, what would Dusty May have to do to get this team, I guess, refocused and getting them playing back like the team that they were at the beginning of the season when they looked like they were going to be the number, like a 2 seed or a 3 seed in the tournament? Right now, they're tripping and falling and stumbling. What can Dusty May do to get this team back to where they were?
Yeah, I think, again, the guards is just a problem. We saw Trey Donaldson again struggle. He only had 2 points. He was 1 of 5 from the floor. Amari Burnett, that 5 points on 2 of 6 from the floor. They can't shoot the three at all right now. They're 3 of 24. Like, I'm wondering if they need to do more pick and roll with Donaldson and Golden or Donaldson and Wolf as opposed to the big pick and roll. They give up too many turnovers, as we saw, which allowed Michigan State to get out and run again, you know, 18 points off turnovers. And that's just not a recipe to win in a tournament. You know, guards win in the tournament. They got to find a way for Donaldson and Burnett to play much better. See if there's some stuff you can do in this Big Ten tournament to try to get some momentum, get some confidence back. Now, I thought they played really hard in the second half. curious to see how it's going to play over, because I thought actually the game could get like 30, 35, but they got it down to 11 before Michigan State pushed it back out. So they need some help from the guards, though. The bigs, they have 47 of the 62 points. That's just not enough guard play.
No, it's funny because it reminded me of when Izzo had figured out B-lines and it was using Xavier Tillman to whenever they did the try to do the pick and roll, he would do the hard edge up top, and that threw the timing off. And then they just kind of, Michigan under B-line has struggled after that. So it kind of looks like that as well, where they're keeping it, because it used to be Wolf and Golden, you know, they would do the pick and roll with each other, and one was going to the basket for a dunk. It was pick your poison. You got Wolf, you got Golden. But now teams have learned if you just switch on both and make Donaldson beat you. Because I'm like, so it really boils down to Donaldson, how far they go.
That's what it seems like. It seems like when he struggled, they've had a hard time winning games, especially the big games. Both Michigan State games, I think he had one bucket. He was under 10 points in both of those games. He didn't do much in the game at Mackey. Maryland, you know, shut him down too. So it really is going to be guard reliant. The bigs could do as much as they want. And we've seen Vlad have big games the last few weeks, and they lose them all. So it needs to be the guards if they're going to do anything.
Okay. All right. So let's get to some Big Ten awards. The awards just came out. Where you want to start?
I mean, Braden Smith winning Player of the Year wasn't a surprise. He got it from the coaches and the media. And I think he had the momentum from the start of the season. He played really well most of the year. Had a little bit of a slump, but he ended strong. You could have made an argument for Trey Kaufman-Wren. You know, I think he led the conference in scoring in league games. And he had the highest usage rate, so a lot of stuff went through him. But I'm fine with Braden there. Defensive Player of the Year, I was a little disappointed they went Ace Baldwin Jr. there. That seemed kind of like a career achievement award. You know, he's a really good defender, but he played hurt a lot of the year. Like, right. He didn't do the normal Ace Baldwin stuff where he's that disruptor, he's diving on the court, you know, taking point guards out of the game.
Now, you're right, because to me, Ace Bailey was a better defender this year than he was. Because, right, it does seem like more of a lifetime achievement award because of everything that he's done for Penn State. But, okay, I thought maybe that would be something that Jay Nakins can get, because Jay Nakins kind of was the guy that kept you under your season average every game. But – you know, I don't get to pick the award, so I can just make fun of people like you who do.
I didn't pick it. I didn't have a vote. I did not have a vote. I would have voted Jay Nakins. He did make all defensive team, which was good. I couldn't really be mad at the other four players who made it. Like, I know TJ Bamba and Nate Biddle are both really good defenders. So is Kobe Johnson from UCLA. But I was surprised that Ace won it. And I was a little surprised Sher Holloman didn't make it.
Yeah. Yeah. So now, Big Ten first team.
Yeah, the first team for the most part was balanced for both. You had Braden, Tanjay, Kaufman-Wren, and Bryce Bruce both make coaches. And the coaches took Derek Queen. The media took Vlad Golden. If it was up to me, I would have had both bigs on there, and I would have had Bryce Williams on the second team. I know Bryce was really good. He had the big. He can get buckets. We know that. But they also finished 16th. Didn't make the Big Ten tournament. Had a stinker in the final game when they really needed it. So he's really good. Don't get me wrong. He is a bucket, but he fell out of the second team.
Yeah, because I got to think that at some point what your team did has to count. You just weren't, as I used to say back in the day, the leading scorer of the Clippers, because somebody had to be the leading scorer. But a little bit shocked that Vlad Goldin didn't make it on both, because honestly, I think had Michigan finished stronger, you could have made a case that Vlad Goldin should have been the player of the year. If I think if Michigan didn't finish 2-4, and let's just say they finished 5-1, I mean, everything went through Vlad. Even when they had bad games, he never did. He always came out. I mean, he was lethal. I mean, he was like their version of Zach Edey, where if the ball went down low, and the only thing you could hope for is he missed the layup because he was going to make that basket.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he had some turnover problems, but he was really efficient. Like, even in the Michigan State game, when they have all of those bigs, he was 9-for-12. He had 29 points. He got to the free throw line 14 times. You know, he's not a great rebounder, but a good enough rebounder. And he had enough big games against good teams. Like, he had 30-something against UCLA. You know, both games against Michigan State, he played well. I was surprised he didn't make first team.
So, let's get to the freshman of the year. Who we got and who's on the all-freshman first team?
Freshman year wasn't a surprise for me. It was Derek King who got it. Again, no issue with that. I was glad to see Jace Richardson make it. Both Rutgers guys were on there. And Yaka Jonas from Illinois on about that five. I don't have a huge issue with it, but I did think Wesley Yates being left off from USC was kind of interesting, considering he led all freshmen in scoring in Big Ten play.
Now, did Dylan Harper kind of like Baldwin, did Dylan Harper kind of make it off of name and reputation because he was injured for some of the year? And honestly, he was the weaker of the two. Now, granted, he's going to make it in the league, but I'm looking at what he did right now.
So I actually would say Harper could have been on there instead of Bailey, if you consider how they finished. Like, once Harper got back from the injury, he was around 20, 21 points a game. And Ace Bailey hadn't hit 20 since the end of January. So he's really been struggling while Harper's been ascending. So I was kind of surprised that both of them made it and Yates didn't, because, you know, if you lead all freshmen in scoring in Big Ten play, you would think that'd be enough to make the freshman team, but it was not.
Too little, too late for Jace Richardson. I mean, he won 3 Big Ten Freshmen of the Week to finish the year out, but just too little, too late for him.
Yeah. If he would have started maybe 2 or 3 weeks before, I think he could have a real charge at it. I was glad to see that the coaches and the media both put him on the third team. Jay Nakins also made the third team for the coaches, so I was happy to see him get that. Richardson really had a chance if he would have started earlier than that Oregon game. But I think it worked out for Michigan State because he didn't hit a freshman wall. You know, he was able to have his minutes managed, and then he was able to kind of step into his role when he was ready.
So, all right. Well, tournament gets ready to start on Wednesday. You're going to be down there, right?
I am, yeah. I'll leave
him. So everybody look for him. He's going to be suited up. He ain't going to be looking like how he looks now when he does his pod. You won't even recognize him. He's going to have his suit. He's going to have his gaiters on. I'll probably be down there Saturday or Sunday to come and check it out and come hang out with you. But you got any numbers for us before we get out?
Yeah, so just a couple other quick things. Tom Izzo, not surprisingly, won Coach of the Year.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I forgot about Coach of the Year. Okay.
Yeah. Well, again, well deserved. We kind of thought that would happen. And I think just to put in perspective how this year went, Michigan State won the league by 3 games. And we know how dominant Purdue was at ED and all that last year, National Player Year. They had the same record in conference play, and Michigan State had a better point differential. So, this was a team that was picked 5th in the preseason, had 1 vote for first place. and they wind up having a better scoring differential and the same conference record as this dominant Purdue team from last year.
Wow. Did not realize that. And you did it with no one being as high as third team.
It is the first time that an outright champion didn't have a first or second team Big Ten player since
1995,
1996.
Wow. Six man?
Six man was Will Riley from Illinois. Well deserved. He definitely came on late. He even looked like the best freshman on the team. I thought he actually played better than Jonas in the last month and a half.
Wow. All right. Well, there you have it. Yeah. I mean, when you look at this Michigan State team, Izzo, nobody on the team averages 14 points or more per game. And yet they sit here. Probably, I don't think that even a Kenyon Martin type of an injury can get them into a one seed. I think if you're Michigan State, you probably want to hope that you get a Cleveland first, second round. And I guess if they reward you, you'll end up with Indianapolis in that region so that, you know, whoever you play. Because when I look at the teams for MSU, because I think they would be the Big Ten's best chance of ending that streak, I think Auburn is probably the one team that I just can't see them getting past, only because Auburn is them 4 years from now. Like, everybody on Auburn is 24 years old. They're grown men. They can go deep. They do everything that Michigan State does. They just have years of experience of doing it more. I think that would be the only problematic team in a one-and-done type of situation. I think Tennessee, if they played Tennessee in an Elite Eight game, I think it would harken back to the days when they used to play Virginia. And the first one who got to that 50-point mark would win the game. Whoever would hit the big three-pointer or the big basket with like 2.5 minutes to go, it reminds me of a lot of those teams when they played Virginia. Alabama's about dunks and three-pointers. If you can play defense to get them and make them play ugly, that's their bugaboo. And Houston, I mean, I think, yeah, that's just another game where it's just kind of going to be one of those a defensive struggle. Probably first one to 55 or 60 wins that game. But Auburn is the only one to me that I think if they were in Auburn's region, I could not see them getting past Auburn in a one game type of situation.
Yeah, I think they might wind up being in Auburn's region though, because the way the SEC is and they got four of the top six seeds right now, overall seeds. So if you look at Auburn, Tennessee, Alabama, Florida, they got to be spaced out. They can't play each other before the Final Four.
No. When you do that, because they're putting like 20 teams from each conference in, I think they don't want them playing until at least, I think it was at least the Elite Eight.
But I think you protect the top four
right,
teams.
Yeah, you try and protect the top ones, yeah.
So you can't have Alabama and Tennessee in the same region as a one or a two, or Auburn and Tennessee as a one or a two. So if you space out Auburn and Florida as your one seed, then Tennessee and Alabama can't be in those. So that you getting stuck with Michigan State there, or maybe Michigan State Southwest playing Florida, and we'll see what happens. I'd be surprised if they got to Indianapolis. They should get Cleveland for sure, but I think they might be in Atlanta or San Francisco.
All right, we'll see. All right, Harold, appreciate it. Enjoy your time in Indy. Hopefully I'll see you down there this weekend. For everybody, keep watching, keep liking, subscribing. We'll be back next week to break down the NCAA tournament, tell you where all the Big Ten teams are going, who's got the best shot of making some noise, who can do the upset, who can be the favorite, and maybe, just maybe, they can end this 24-year streak and get a title, because I guess technically Maryland wasn't in the Big Ten when they won it. So for Harold Shelton, I'm Rico Beard. Thanks for watching. We'll be back next week. Thanks for watching the Five Star Zone.